Hi, Jewish Mom. It's so exciting to be here. I'm going to be talking tonight with Jamie Geller, which is so exciting. We were supposed to speak with her before Purim, and then something emergency came up and it didn't happen. So Baruch Hashem, I'm so happy because I'm sure that all of us have a lot that we need, a lot of wisdom that we need from Jamie. Tips and tricks about getting Pesach done for busy moms, and all of us, I'm sure, are busy moms. So I wanted to first of all tell you who I am. I'm sure that you know who Jamie Geller is if you're here. My name is Hannah Jenny Weisberg. I have a website called JewishMom.com. I've been blogging one way or another for about 20 years. And I've been on Facebook for a long time and blogging. More recently, I've gotten into checking out Instagram. And I've realized that there's moms, Jewish moms on Instagram who are reaching tens of thousands. People like Jamie Geller are reaching tens of thousands and inspiring Jewish moms. I was curious to meet these moms and see like what inspires them, who they are. Because I think it's incredible, these women who are inspiring other Jewish moms on a really huge scale. I've been doing a series of interviews with moms who are among the top leading, influential and inspirational Jewish moms on Instagram. I interviewed Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, I interviewed Hani Rosengarten, and now tonight we're interviewing Jamie Geller. And after Pesach, we'll be interviewing more influential and inspirational Jewish moms, because I'm really, really loving this. I'm loving meeting these people who are my kindred spirits, women who are passionate about inspiring other Jewish moms. I wanted to also thank a person who, if it wasn't for her, none of us would be here tonight. Her name is Ximena. Oh. Her name is Ximena Orozco. Here, she's my assistant slash producer. Ximena spelled Ximena. She's a celebrity in Mexico. She's 120,000 people. Mm-hmm.
Hi, everyone.
She's 120,000 people following her on Instagram. Check her out now. And she is now in Israel at Machon Ora at a seminary, learning about her heritage, about the Jewish heritage. And she's on fire with Judaism. And so when I met her, I realized that she could help me, like through Instagram to whatever. So she's become my social media consultant, helping me to figure out Instagram and et cetera, et cetera. So thank you, Ximena. Okay, great. So. Is Jamie here? I think Jamie. Oh yeah, it says H Global. I think probably that's. Yeah. Okay. 1 second. So I think Jamie's. Yeah. Great. Okay. Great. So Jamie's joining us. Yeah. It's exciting! Jamie Geller! It's Jamie. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, did we?
Yeah. We already.
Okay. Wow! This is exciting! It's happening! Yay, this is exciting! Wow!
Hannah Jenny, I can't believe it. It's a miracle I'm here, but I'm so thrilled to be here finally.
Wow. Okay, so first of all, I want to introduce, for the woman who needs no introduction, introduce Jamie Geller. Jamie Geller, wow! In the flesh. Is the Chief Media and Marketing Officer at H Global and the CEO of Kosher Network International. Having successfully built a portfolio of Jewish food and lifestyle digital media brands with an audience of millions and over a billion video views. Wow! She recently joined the H Global executive team to spearhead a digital media strategy featuring entertainment, edutainment, and educational experiences to make Jewish wisdom more accessible and engaging for people all across the globe. H.com is amazing, amazing. I'm actually religious because of the Discovery Program. I know you'd also mentioned the Discovery Program. Like that was what really, I was like 30 years ago, I was at Nevei, and I did the Discovery Program. It's like, I got it, like, this is true. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Weinberg. Thank you, H.com. Okay, continue going on. While redefining digital media success in the Jewish world, Jamie Giller is also busy being a mother of six and a seven-time best-selling author who appears regularly on the Today Show and daytime talk show circuit and has been featured in the New York Times, Forbes, Cosmopolitan, Yahoo, among other media outlets. Yay, Jewish man, Jamie Giller! Wow, I'm so happy that you're here. Good. I'm happy that you made it. Wow. So I just wanted to tell you why I'm especially happy that we're having this talk tonight, because I just found out yesterday that my youngest child, who's six, is sick with corona, with COVID. Baruch Hashem, he's doing fine. So I now have.
Recovery. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So Baruch Hashem, he's doing fine. He feels fine. But now my entire house, I Baruch Hashem, am vaccinated, also my husband, but we are an entire house of people in quarantine, and so I'm really, really, really desperately in need of tips, tips and tricks for making Pesach happen. Okay. But first of all, there are a few questions I wanted to just ask you, things that I've been doing research on Jamie Giller.
You had extra long time since the first interview got delayed, so I expect you're going to know, who my first grade teacher was, and I'll tell you all the time.
So this is a question that in all of my research that I did not find an answer to. But I think it's the most pressing question in our minds as Jamie Giller, readers and viewers, is you're always working with food, but how do you stay so thin? What's your secret?
First of all, you are so kind and you're so sweet. I gained about 40 pounds since Corona.
Really?
So, yeah, I don't know if we can still say the same thing, so I will thank you, for that. I really just am having a lot of trouble, a lot of challenging. It's one thing when you gain a little bit of weight, right? You feel uncomfortable about yourself or you don't feel confident. But now, literally, nothing fits if it's not elastic waist.
Wow.
And it is very hard when you have to get dressed for work. And dress, so I can, when I'm doing stuff for cooking, work cooking related stuff, so I put on the apron. You see me from the front, so you can't really tell, right? I'm always scared someone's going to ask me what I'm going to do, because I carry my weight in my stomach ever since, even before I had kids. So as long as I don't turn sideways on camera with the apron on, it's pretty okay, But once I have to go out to work for H, and I have to go to meetings and
No apron. No apron. That's the problem.
Right. I can't wear an apron there. And I went to meet with Adam Milstein. He's the former special assistant to the ambassador of Israel to the U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, and I had to meet with him, and I was crying. It took me half an hour to get ready. I almost did not make the bus, and then I literally went in with a fancy sweatshirt.
Oh.
And I was can I get away with a fancy sweatshirt? Can I wear a fancy sweatshirt to a work thing? So I'm just like everyone else, literally, this has always been a challenge for me, and this last year I just put it over the top. It's been a doozy.
Okay, but I just want to say, so this is relative to how thin, but you're always around amazing food. So, if I was in that situation, I would be, a size, I don't know. So how do you, even though, you're relatively, how do you keep from eating, do you know what I'm asking?
I love food. I don't know if you really follow what I do. I like eating more than I like cooking. That's really, the secret here. So it's very challenging. Whenever I'm in a space of when I'm really developing recipes, whether it's for a cookbook or a specific article for something new, I always put on the pounds. It's very hard for me to control myself around yummy, delicious food that I love. And then otherwise, when I'm in between things, so I generally eat very low carb during the week. Not no carb, but just low carb. Mm-hmm. And I have challah on Shabbat. And when I'm really watching, I will have a very small bite of dessert or no dessert and just fruit. even on Shabbat. But otherwise, I love to start, it's my favorite thing.
Wow.
And I used to before Corona exercise, kind of Jenny, but now I've been having trouble finding the time.
Wow.
So my commitment to myself, I started now with, I try to stretch at least 10 minutes before the day starts. And I always have the intention to keep my sneakers on and maybe do something else throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So far that hasn't worked in terms of like more cardio, but at least I started to get back into stretching, just to get my body moving again, because right. It's a little creaky after a year of like sitting around the house, you know?
Wow. Okay, so you used to go to the gym?
I used to do more like walks. I live in Ramat Beit Shemesh, which mm-hmm. is a sort of very mountainous area. And so you could get an amazing workout walking around the hills over here. So I used to do that with my husband. I jump roped. I did push-ups. So a lot of, like, home stuff. I didn't have a lot of time to, like, drive myself to the gym and drive myself back. Like, literally, like, no time for that. So whatever I could do in my space, you know. So I really, like, jump rope is really good. I have some free weights I used to do, but whatever. So we're going to get back into it now.
Right, good. Okay, so which leads me to the next question. So can you just tell me, like, when I think of all the things you do, like, I just don't know how it's possible that one person could do all these things. So you're like, you're the mother, you're a devoted mother of six children, a wife, you're the CEO of Kosher Network International, you're the CMO of Esht Global. So tell me, like, can you tell me, like, what does your day look like?
It is so intense. I want to just say I could not do anything that I do without. I have a tremendous, tremendous team. Tremendous. At Kay and I have an unbelievable team. At H Global, I have an unbelievable, huge, huge team. And at home, it's like, it used to just be my husband, who's like the most unbelievable party. A woman cannot do this without the most amazing partner standing by her side. But now I really have two teenage girls. One's almost 15 and one's going to be 16 next week. So it's like, it's like team family, and they're literally helping run the house. So there's no such thing as some woman doing this all on her own, superwoman taking it. It's like, it is like a team community effort. I always say it's the prayers of my mother. My mother prays for me nonstop to be successful. Like, everything I do. So it's that combination of everything. But the days are like so intense. I started a little late today. It's Sunday, but it's a work day here in Israel. But my son, who's feeling better, was up throwing up all night.
Oh, no.
So I'm at 12, at 2, at 4, and at 6. So at 6, I went back to bed thinking, I'll just go for like a little bit. I was up with my son, so my husband got to sleep, so he got the kids off in the morning. And so I thought I'm going to sleep a little bit late, so I woke up at 8:30, which is like crazy late, right? You know? And I started my calls at 9. And I literally ran from my last call to you. It's 8:15 at night here. It's like 11 hours of calls today. 11 hours of calls.
Wow.
That's the majority. And except then when I'm out or when I'm shooting or when I'm running in Jerusalem and the head of Ish World Center headquarters. So then I'm there in meetings all day. But when I'm home in my home office, it's like 10 to 11 hours of calls a day.
Wow.
Very unglamorous.
Wow.
Very unglamorous.
Wow. So you mentioned your mom, and I want to ask you, you know, our moms, my mother actually passed away four months ago, but my mom and your mom actually had something in common. You said, from my research, I heard you say that when you started keeping kosher, your mom said, well, you can use my oven, no problem, because I've never used it. I've never turned it on. And I think that my mother probably would have said something similar. What I'm curious to know is, so you went from being somebody who never cooked and grew up in a house where, like, your mom didn't cook, and then you became a person who loves cooking. I've never made that transition. I grew up in a house where my mom never cooked, and I cook what I have to, but I want to know, like words of wisdom, like, from your experience, like, how did you become transformed a person who loves and is passionate about cooking?
I'm not love and passionate. I don't love cooking. I'm not passionate about cooking. I love and am passionate about entertaining.
Oh.
I love having a family meal. I love having the family around the table. I love the holidays. I love having company and guests. I love hours and hours being together, sharing memories and talking and creating new memories around food. So to me, food has always been a conduit for all the things that I love, and that's how I got up the, let's call it a pseudo passion for cooking, because it's really not my first love. It's all, but it's everything that it produces and results in. That's what I love so much.
Right.
And so, but look, some Shabbos, like some weekends, I'm crazy busy. This past week, you know, this is the first time we actually had a company since COVID, so for well over a year.
Wow.
So our friends who came, I made the first course and dessert, and they made the main. You know, like we divvied it up so that we could be together without anyone feeling too overwhelmed. A few weeks ago, I was like, again, like there's a lot of change and transition going on right now. Pastor was a crazy, crazy busy time for us over at K&I. So we've got a lot going on with Aish, and we're like really full steam ahead on something called Aish Vision 2030, which is like our vision for the next 10 years. So the next year is going to be like laying the groundwork for all of that. And now we're the first few months of that. And things have been so, so, so crazy. So I did all takeout for Shabbos.
Wow.
It happened.
Wow.
Yeah. So it happened. And I remember, of course, I didn't go to pick it up because I'm so busy. And my kids came home and they're like, they said, that's Shane Miguel's daughter. And she likes our poppers and she's making our chicken wings and she's ordering our cook
all
over.
Wow. Yeah, I should say, for all of us, it's extremely validating to know that you took, that you did take out for Shabbos, for a Shabbos. That is so validating for a regular, for the rest of us.
Yeah, it was so funny. And they like called it out. I couldn't even do it undercover. They were like, Jamie Miguel is ordering her whole shop here, you know? And like, I recognize my kids. But I do that. And I just feel like what's most important is that we're together as a family, a nuclear family, extended family, friends and family, new guests, new friends, new family around the table. And that fuels my passion for everything that I do.
Wow. That's beautiful. Okay. So we're gathered here tonight and this afternoon in America to talk about, to get tips and tricks for getting ready, like to stay sane, get ready for Pesach. So what do you want to tell us?
I mean, there's a lot of things I could tell you. The first thing I want to tell you is don't stress. Every time we stress, it just makes everything worse. But we have to be in a really positive frame of mind going into this. I always say slavery is so yesterday, okay? This is not what preparing for Passover is. So that's number one. Number two is it's not spring clean. As much as we would like to use the occasion to do spring cleaning, if you don't have, you know, a bundle of time on your hands and older kids who can help you, or don't have a lot of younger kids around, so yeah, maybe you could start, like, you know, dusting out, you know, the couch cushions. But the bottom line is, you need to do the minimal cleaning that you have to do so that your house is kosher for Passover according to your standards and according to, you know, the rules that you follow, but do not go overboard. Now is not the time, right? Like, do your spring cleaning a few weeks before or a few weeks after. No reason why not. But to have to, it's this thing, once we start combining and piling up and piling up and piling everything on top, it's just a ton. The next thing is, we actually have a guide. No one's offered. It's free for all of your followers. We'll give you guys the link after. You can download. Thanks. This is like your sprint to Passover guide. And we did it in conjunction with a friend of ours at Balagan Be Gone. And this is a way to just relax and focus yourself. When you have lists, checklists, a calendar, a plan, on this day you're doing this, and on this week you're focused on that, it's going to just free up the headspace, right? It's just, if you don't want to use our guide, again, free, it's for you guys, just to be used because we want to be helpful, but if you don't want to use it, then please write things down.
What's in the guide? The guide is what, like, to get the house ready?
It's to get the house ready, to get your menus ready, to allow you to shop. It gives you every single day what to do in terms of cleaning the house, every single day what to do in terms of cleaning the kitchen, every single list of what you're going to need in order to pull off Passover. For many people, it's their first or second Passover home now with Corona.
Yay.
So what do you need? Your Seder checklist guide. What are the essential, not the extras, but the essential pots and pans that you're going to need over the course of the holiday if you want to cook everything? What are the energy, again, you can buy disposable if you want, but what is sort of the silverware and the cutlery situation and the serving pieces that you're going to need? Because, like, the worst thing is you go to Passover, you go to, like, even if it's just your family, and you're serving stuff on, like, a dinner plate, when you really need, like, a larger serving bowl or a larger platter. How many platters, how many serving bowls do you need? Which days, to, like I said, to shop for what? And I think, to me, my most favorite part is really the Seder checklist. Because we're doing, like, all this cooking, all this cleaning, all this menu prep. What can you cook ahead? What can you freeze? So you have for the last days, et cetera. And you forget, you get to the Seder, you're like, oh my gosh, what's on the seder plate? I didn't think about what I need on the seder plate. I didn't think about what I need for the actual seder night itself. So we have the seder checklist as well. So it's like all the thinking for you. But the bottom line is when you write things down, when you list, when you calendar, it frees up the headspace. You can't imagine what a drag and what a strain and what a drain it is to carry that stuff around in your head. Right. It's like once it's down, it's like, okay, now you have a plan. Now it's down.
So, just curious. So what's the first thing that you get, what's the first thing that you clean for Pesach?
So I start, we start at Purim time, like right the day after Purim, and we start with, I move my way towards the kitchen. So I go from the furthest to the kitchen, so for us, we start with the playroom, we start with the kids' rooms, and we slowly inch our way into, our playroom is off to the side of the house, it's not like in the main area, then we inch our way to your living room, dining room, kitchen is the last. So, guest room. That kind of thing. And we actually put up signs on the door that say, you know, this room is clean for Passover. So it's a reminder for ourselves, first of all, it's a great sense of accomplishment, but it's also a reminder for ourselves, stop, don't bring that plate in, don't bring yourself in, you know, like that, whatever it is, it's clean for Passover. So let's make sure we don't bring anything beyond this point. And like I said, I work from the out in.
Right. So I have a big question about the meal for Seder night. There's always like this ongoing issue every single year that, you know, so we're so hungry and we're so looking forward to the big meal, and then you eat all of that matzah and you have no one has any room left for the actual meal. Do you have any thoughts about that and how to prepare for that?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, I go much lighter with the meal, much lighter. When the Seder does not fall on Shabbat, so I don't do a fish course. Right, like the fish course is for Shabbat, but it's not specific to the Seder, so I don't do that extra course. Depending on the year, I think I generally do soup. If I'm having company, would you say there with a lot of people that I do the soup because I feel like it's kind of expected. But when it's just the family, I'll usually just go right into the main because we've had so much to eat already. And remember, you have to be hungry for the Afikoman at the end, you know? Overdo it. I don't do a meat and a chicken. I'll do one main. I'll do only one sort of like starchy side, like a potato, you know, situation, and the rest is like vegetables and salads. And I don't overcook. It's like, unlike any other holiday meal, I don't go crazy overcooking and lavish with it because of all of the sort of things that we have to eat as part of the Seder. So then it just takes away. Either people are full, they don't eat it, or they're hungry for something common. It's like, from what point? It's late at night at that point. So it's really just more like something light.
Right. So I think that you're the perfect person to ask this question. As the CMO of Ace Global and the CEO of Kosher Network International, because there's always this feeling like there's kind of a tension between, like, you know, investing in the food and the tablescape and like the beautiful dishes, and versus connecting with like the ish.com, connecting with the deep meaning of what's happening. You know, how do you feel about that tension? How do you maintain the right balance? Not only on Pesach, because it sounds Pesach like it's very simple what you do, but how do you for yourself maintain the right balance?
So I think I always careful when I answer questions like this because I think for some people, the stunning tablescape, right, or cooking things that are a little bit more what I'll call an Yiddish funkapatch, right, like overdone and beautiful and super elegant and take a lot of time investment. For some people, that is their joy and their passion and their therapy in many, many ways. And that brings them happiness and pleasure, and that's their outlet and their creative outlet. So I never want to say, don't do that, if that does, in fact, bring you joy and that feeds your creative soul. Very, very important. For those that is overwhelming, I have a few things. Like, I love a charger. You know, I think that just, like, elevates every time I put the charger down and I have company. Sometimes the charger is an actual sort of like larger melamine, like a harder charger. Sometimes it's just a beautiful silver placemat, like a PVC type of thing. But the idea is once you plate that, put that extra piece under the plate and under the table setting, it's like, wow. And everyone comes in and thinks it's so fancy. So it's something so simple and so easy. You buy however many people you're expecting to have. And whether, again, it's like just a silver placemat or a gold proper charger or something that matches your color scheme. And I think that's like such an easy way to elevate the table for Shabbat, Passover, and a holiday.
Yeah. So just take a second. You just have it in the closet. You just put it there and it like makes it look like $1 million.
Yeah, it makes it look special, and it doesn't take creativity, it doesn't take extra time, it just, like, it's like you're placing it anyway. The other thing I love doing, just trying to think of easy tips to, like, make the table really, really nice. So for the younger kids, right, we don't give them china. It's like, I'm down to, like, not even as much china. I also just think we're almost at the place after almost 17 years of marriage where we have to probably get, like, another second plate that's broken and not made their way through, you know? So I don't give it to the other kids, but I do invest at this time of year for really nice disposables, not like what you would use on a regular week or for a regular dinner meal. And I feel like that also, it's something simple, it's easy to clean up, but I do spend a little bit of extra money on beautiful disposables, and including with that, like, very, very nice. Like, we have these ones, they look like marble. Like, I love them. Like, I even like them more than my china. It came in my china pot, and, like, you know, I would... And it's stunning, and also beautiful napkins to go with that. And I let the kids pick out something really fun and really floral or festive or colorful or elegant. Like, we go there, and I think that just makes the table a lot happier. And then always just making sure to have flowers in the center. And I think those few things, like investing in extra disposables, getting those chargers, beautiful napkins, I think that you can really elevate it for not so much more money and not so much more time.
Right. That's a great idea. So when you're looking for to Pesach, like, what is, like, what's the most inspirational thing for you about Pesach? What's, like, the message of it that you really connect with?
I think when I first became religious, one of the reasons, one of the things that really attracted me to Judaism was that stopping from the daily grind. And having worked, my background is as a TV producer. I was working at CNN at the time in the city. I always say, like, you could work 24/7, it wouldn't be enough. I would tell you, they would go to the bathroom for you if they could. Like, you just keep working. Never stop, never think, never focus. And that desire to disconnect and stop and think before disconnecting was cool, you know, over 20 years ago. That's really what connected me to Judaism. And on my first day there, when I became religious, I remembered hearing it. Now it's common, as those we've heard it already many, many times, but freedom, slavery, and, like, what is slavery and what is freedom? And the whole idea of that, you know, obviously we can think about all different kinds of slavery these days that do exist in the world, but to most of us, it's generally very foreign. And certainly the kind of back-breaking slave labor that the Jews endured in Egypt is, like, beyond foreign to us. But when we bring it connected to an idea of us being enslaved to our work, to the pursuit of money, to the pursuit of honor, to our phones, to our devices, to our, like, to everything and anything but our family and that quality time with them, we're almost enslaved. Even if you're a stay at home mom, you can be enslaved to the family on a regular basis. But now you get that quantity, but you don't get that quality. And I think that idea of what is slavery and what is freedom, and connecting to that in a way that really speaks to me in my daily life, that's what I look forward to, that focusing on separating myself from that and focusing on the family in a way that's supposed to help us come together and bring us together as a unit, as the Jewish people, and help our continuation for all the generations to come, God willing, this exercise of the Seder, that's what I connect to very much.
Right, right, right. So we're about to close up. We're about to finish up. So if anyone has any final questions for Jamie, please send. But I was interested to know, I have to answer, thank you very much, Jamie, for giving and for sponsoring a giveaway. We're going to be giving away, do you have the book there, Brisket 101? Yay! Okay. So actually, what's amazing is that this book is actually it's kosher for Passover, right?
It's 99% kosher for Passover, meaning all the brisky recipes are for sure kosher for Passover, or 99%, as long as you get kosher for Passover ingredients. And then it has a lot of, I guess, for sides and slaws and leftovers. So, but the majority is kosher for Passover.
Right. So first of all, I'd like to announce the winner. So basically today using random.org, I chose the winner. Her name is I hope that you're here with us. Her name is Rachel. Her Instagram name is MJB79. So you are the winner of Brisket 101. So Jamie will be sending that to you. So before we finish, I just want to ask you one last question. So it sounds like you grew up in a very different home than the home that you have now. Your parents are from Romania? From communist Romania?
Yeah, from Transylvania, yeah.
Transylvania, okay.
I would say they went from Transylvania to Pennsylvania.
Wow. So do you have any traditions which you've continued, like of your Seder night when you were growing up to today and the very, very different life that you're living with your family in the Ramat Beit Shemesh?
So my grandparents were all survivors, and they very much Hungarian dishes, Romanian dishes, like raised our table. They were fantastic cooks. I always say they had a really challenging time expressing themselves emotionally and even physically, but showed their love through food.
Wow.
And that was something that we always, always felt. And I think that based on their experiences in the war and what they went through in their lives, like opening up verbally, talking about their experiences, yeah, telling us that, you know, they love us, even though they did to the extent that they could, and hugging us, and overly, like, they had experienced a lot of loss, and so you can imagine the trauma that's associated with that. Although as they got older and older, things did get easier and easier for them in terms of those expressions, but cooking was like, they couldn't stop feeding us.
Wow.
And it's like, you can understand the emotional, psychological, you know, effects of that, you know, for them, like having gone hungry all of those years and having finally being able to do this. And so the Seder, even though I didn't grow up religious, we drove to the Seder, we drove home from the Seder, you know, maybe we would watch TV after Seder night or the next day, but we had a very traditional Seder. We sang everything,
wow,
we said every word of the Haggadah,
really?
The Seder plate was full, my grandfather made his own charoset, like everything. And so I think of them so much, and my grandfather, it's his yahrzeit, he passed away the first night of the Seder.
Wow.
And so, yeah, 13 years ago, yeah, it makes me think about them, and I think that's what I was pointing out before, it connects us to our past and to our future, and it connects all these generations. I think the Passover Seder is one of the most religiously performed holidays across the United States,
right,
more so than even like lighting Hanukkah candles. The Passover Seder has been.
Really?
And
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Something
it's one
that's
of the
amazing.
Most
yeah,
it's the number one, I think it's one of the top observed Jewish traditions, experiences, mitzvahs out there that's still keeping families together no matter what level of identification or observance.
Right. And something also amazing about food, like about the whole, like, making food, is that food is something that unites all Jews. You know, like the Jew, like a Jew who doesn't know anything about, you know, has very, very little Jewish knowledge, knows if they're Ashkenazi what, you know, what gefilte fish is. You know, they know about, like, the parsley that you'd have in the salt water. Actually, I think that maybe that, I always feel like that taste is the oldest taste I ever tasted. It's like the oldest, it's like a primordial taste in my life, that taste of the parsley in the salt water. So I so want to thank you so much, Jamie Geller, for taking the time. I think that you're one of the, you are quite possibly one of the busiest Jewish moms in the world. So I am so grateful that you took the time to share from your wisdom with Jewish moms and with JewishMom.com. And so thank you so much.
Ajay, it means so much to be invited. I'm so sorry. You know, I wasn't able to make the first time. As you can imagine, like, emergencies happen.
Yeah, totally.
But it was a pleasure to be with you and to speak to you and to be able to give a gift to your followers. And thank you for having me and letting us talk
so
just a little bit about food and family and holidays. So
thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you very much.